let's get going into the Uniball Awards, the first official one. The awards suck this year. They're kind of chalk across the board. Do we want to talk about Jokic winning MVP again? Do we want to talk about all the things we've already kind of discussed? Defensive Player of the Year is kind of boring. So we decided to come up with our own awards, the Uniball Awards, where we go down and we list off some media-based awards, some NBA player-based awards. Mm-hmm. And Sam, how excited are you for the first Uniball Awards?
I'm really excited. I think that this is an awesome honor that we're bestowing on a lot of players. I know that players are tuning in right now. I know that says that there's only 45 people in here. That's playback squashing our numbers. There's at least 450 because every player in the league is watching this right now. Probably more like 510 because every two-way player is also watching this right now. This is the ESPYs. This is the Oscars. I'm not able to slap Trill, but I have hired a man to come into his home and accost him. So we can kind of keep up with the Oscars like live, you know.
Very relevant bit 2 years later. Awesome. I'm so glad.
Yeah, love that too.
I mean, our culture.
I didn't want to talk about Jimmy Kimmel.
We're still feeling the effects now in our culture that sent shockwaves through. Of course, you're referring to the thing that is arguably just as impactful as 9/11. On media and the Chris Rock slap. So the first award that we're going to do here is the Zach Lowe Guy Award. So the ultimate Zach Lowe player, aka the honorary Bam Adebayo Award. I don't know if you remember this, but Zach had probably a 3 or 4 year period where he was just like, I was basically the first Bam. I'm Bam Adebayo's father.
Yes.
is what I'm trying to say here is that he was like, I loved him when he was younger. He, you know, when he was 19, 20, I thought that he was going to be a great player. He didn't get the opportunity. He finally gets the opportunity. He shows how good he could be. And then obviously he pops in the bubble, whatever. So this is kind of this award is basically a nerd favorite.
Yes.
Who, basically, when you talk about them, you love to kind of glowingly speak about them. Not just Zach does this, but it kind of is a flex of your NBA knowledge, right? It's kind of like, oh yeah, I've been grinding the tape. I've been watching. I know, AKA, you know, players that nerds love to jack off to is what I had here.
Yes, as
the subtitle.
Yeah, you. This is the kind of player where you get mad. Like you turn on Fox Sports 1 and you get so mad that like Skip Bayless and the other guys aren't talking about how good this player is in pick and roll.
Yeah.
And you're so offended that nobody wants to like that TV that isn't making TV or First Take or anything like that. So
you see Shaq not know who this player is and you tweet a death threat because
you get permabanned for doing all of this stuff any of these players. So
I had it as a rising star or a niche role player, so it's got to be one of those two for me. And I had this year I have six candidates written down.
Okay.
Number one, Jalen Johnson. Okay. Number two, Herb Jones. Number three, J-Dub, a.k.a. Jalen Williams from Oklahoma City.
I had Jalen Williams on my list as well.
Number four, Isaiah Hartenstein.
Oh, that's a good one.
Number five, Vince Williams Jr.
Another good one.
And number six, Naz Reid.
I had Naz Reid on my list as well.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of the Hartenstein pick. I didn't think of that one.
Well, especially because Hartenstein's kind of been a guy that was like loved by nerds even before he popped. Like drafted by Daryl Morey, second round pick, kind of floated around. The guy who runs the Jokic subreddit that was like one of the original OG Jokic fans back in like 2014 also runs a subreddit called Hartenstein. it's not a dated reference because this has really been the first year where he's popped, but this is the first year where he's been able to kind of show why all the nerds really love him, and he's gotten this opportunity with the Knicks. So is there anyone that I missed that you would throw on that
list? I didn't. You sent me a thing of this. The other three guys I had on my list, some of them don't hit the criteria of like being like a role player perfectly, but these are guys that I think Zach would, you know, you can hear Zach saying, by the way, nobody's talking about blank, you know, this guy is a stud, man. This guy is a stud, and we just don't, you know. So other guys I had, I feel like it's like he would, Alex Caruso I had on here just as kind of a rotating back one.
I think Alex Caruso was like 2 to 3 years ago
Well, my thinking is it's kind of come back around where like Zach would be like, you know, we talk about Alex, but like, man, the Bulls are 37 wins.
Yeah.
You look at their roster. Look at their roster. Go, Bobby Marks, go read their roster and then come back to me. And you tell me who, you know, like he would kind of do that whole thing.
He would say, Bobby Marks, pound for pound, is there a better defender in the NBA than Alex Caruso? Now, take the bigs out of the conversation, obviously. Obviously, but I'm just talking about from pound for pound, is there a better defender in the NBA than Alex Caruso?
I don't know, Zach. I mean, this is a guy who's won a lot of games. He's been a winner. He's been an NBA champion. You know, I'd trade for him. That's what I wanted to hear, Bobby Marks. That is what I wanted to hear. I also had Devin Vassell on this list as another one. And then this is the biggest name, but I think that this is Zach would absolutely, if you were running this award, this would be like the first name out of his mouth, Chris Middleton.
Chris Middleton was the guy when he was, especially when he was making all-star teams, Zach would get really mad. Zach would be like, people don't respect Chris Middleton enough.
Yes.
Like people get mad when Chris Middleton makes, and he would, you know, he would argue he was better than like Bradley Beal, whoever made it. And he was right. Middleton probably was better than Bradley Beal the years that he was making it. But either way, I do see
Middleton's like the king of like the, we don't respect how good he is.
Yes. We saw it. Like we saw it in the finals and you know, they won a championship. He was the second best player on the team. I think he's gotten his flowers. He and
Jalen Williams are like the Pokemon evolutions of each
other. Sure. J-Dub is definitely the new kind of nerd favorite where it's because he's actually very clearly made a leap into becoming like an actual top player in his second year when he was kind of just like a trendy nerd favorite in his rookie season. And even in the draft, he was kind of a trendy nerd favorite guy. But so of the guys that we have listed here, who do we think wins? Let's see what chat thinks. Who should win out of all the guys that we have listed? I see that people say Isaac is a someone that we should have mentioned, Jonathan Isaac. I have him for a later category that we will get into. I do think that he would also be a good choice for this category. I would say that he doesn't quite play enough. All these guys are like starters, basically, or at least playing starters minutes. Like Naz Reid is playing starters minutes now. So the nominees were Jalen Johnson, Herb Jones, Jalen Williams, Isaiah Hartenstein, and Vince Williams Jr. and Naz Reid. So Hartenstein, Jalen Williams. I kind of think Jalen Williams is. I'm surprised that more people don't like Herb Jones. Like for this, I feel like Herb Jones is like the ultimate, like I know ball, look at me kind of player.
Well, he's going to win defensive player.
I mean, he's going to get votes. I don't think he'll win, but
no, he won't win. But like, you know, he's going to be like in the mix on some of that. And it's like Herb Jones is like also kind of Herb Jones has a little bit of dog factor. You know what I'm saying? Where he's kind of like a Marcus Smart isn't a perfect comp, but like old heads like Bill.
Sure.
Kind of like Herb Jones guys, you know what I'm saying? Like where it's not a one-to-one. I'm thinking about the Vorps and Schnorps perverts who like have three long like tweet threads about like, it's so sad that we don't always talk about how good Jalen Williams is at rebounding. And it's like, all right, awesome, man. Like, yeah, everyone loves that.
Like Isaiah Hartenstein, it's got to be Hartenstein or
Hartenstein
or J-Dubs.
Yes. And I don't know about that, because let's talk through the candidacy, okay? Because Hartenstein, like, has kind of, he's like the nerd, like, he's like bounced around quite a bit. Thomas Robinson went down and the Knicks got better.
Mitchell Robinson.
Whatever.
Oh, I didn't realize him. That's
whatever.
Yeah. I always thought he billing. Was a bust, to be honest. But.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Mitchell Robinson went down, and I thought that, you know, because everything the Knicks did was predicated on rebounding. And sure. I think they got better after they like got Hartenstein. So
this is such a Zach thing too, where it's like Zach likes to be a little bit narrative driven. You know what I mean? Yes. Not quite as much as some other people. He doesn't need like a fairy tale story to vote for someone for MVP, for example. He'll just vote for the best player. But I do think that he definitely would buy into that. Like Mitchell Robinson goes down. Everyone was like, the Knicks might be cooked, whatever. They come in, and when they were somewhat healthy, they were a better team. They're way better when he's on the court. I think I'm going to go with, I think the argument here is that J-Dub might just be too good. And I think Hartenstein is kind of the winner of this award, because he's still like, you really have to be invested to care about, I say, Hartenstein in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there we go. And Peter's got the clip for us.
From 2 years ago, Zach Lowe has been raving about how Isaiah Hartenstein has been one of the best backup bigs in the NBA.
So there you go. That's proven up. Yeah. And I mean, the only thing I would say is that Hartenstein like has the Knicks boost. You know what I'm saying? Like you're starting to see clips on the timeline. Like, did you know that Hartenstein's black? Here, look at him and Josh Hart talking about it. You know, like
he's new Pete Wentz just dropped.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. New Pete Wentz. Exactly.
he's a quarter black. His dad was half black. And that's
meanwhile, like because J-Dub is on the Thunder, we continue to have to hear the pissing and the moaning and the bitching about how nobody cares about the Thunder and how like good they, so like there's a doubling effect there. You know what I'm saying? About like the persecution complex about how nobody cares about how good J-Dub is and nobody likes the Thunder and you know, so
quick question for you.
Yes.
I see someone comment Black Jokic in the comments. DJ Burns or Isaiah Hartenstein? Who's your favorite version of Black Jokic?
DJ Burns, still not on draft boards. I'm ready to call him a Celtic with their second round pick. Let's go.
That's the classic anti NC State bias that the Dukeheads that run the draft have been spreading. DJ Burns will have a 10-year NBA career just for being cool as shit.
Yeah.
Aura. So I have two categories for the next award.
Oh, okay.
This is the Bill Simmons Award, a guy who has become so overrated that he's underrated. But I also have guys that have become so underrated that they're overrated.
Oh, I didn't have that. I didn't see that half.
So honestly, I added it later. I wanted to focus more on the overrated portion of this anyway. But this is basically, at one point in his career, Drew Holiday was on both sides of this, where he was so underrated for so long that he became overrated. And now everyone kind of caught up to that. And it's like, all right, well, maybe Drew's not quite as bad as, you know, we were saying when we were saying that he's overrated like he has been these last few years with the Bucks during their run. So I have in the overrated category, which these are the guys that were called so overrated that they're actually kind of underrated now. Okay. I have Domantas Sabonis, Jaylen Brown, Karl Anthony Towns, Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, and Dylan Brooks.
Wow. We went we had zero overlap, which is crazy to me. Some of mine aren't as good, so I had Jason Tatum in this category.
I'm banning Tatum talk from the podcast, so I'm glad that you brought that up. I don't want to have another conversation about him until the playoffs. So,
but it's funny you put Cat because I had Rudy Gobert.
So the other big, Gobert's a really good one, and I'm kind of upset that I didn't think about him because he kind of fits this perfectly.
And the other
I will not let the Celtics fans in the chat sway me from this, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other two I had, because I went like stars. I went Zion Williamson was the other one I had.
Does anyone think Zion's overrated though? I feel like he was just not available.
Well, but everyone was saying his career was over like a year and a half ago.
I feel like that's just a different thing though.
I guess that's true.
I feel like that's just like if he's never healthy and maybe he isn't physically the same.
But you know, but what I would say is that there's like a boomer implication that it like is his fault. Like there's a lot of talk about how good the food is in New Orleans. Like there's not really good food in pretty much every American. I mean, yes, New Orleans food is great, you know what I'm saying? But like New York has like really good food too. You know what I'm
My favorite part about New Orleans, though, is that they just don't even try to pretend to care about health. You'll go to a restaurant, you'll be like, "Was this cooked in lard?" And they're like, "Yes." And we're like, "All right, good. That's how I know it's good."
Yeah.
If I go to New Orleans, I don't care about my health, to be fair. But yes.
That's true. Fair. But I mean, fair enough. The other one I had was Donovan Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell. Okay. Yeah. Well, you're really the only one that thinks Donovan Mitchell super overrated.
Correct. I had to put my own feelings. I had to put my own feelings on the shelf here because I think he's correctly underrated because he's dog shit. But own feelings.
You think he's correctly underrated because he's dog shit?
Yes, because he's not good. He's a loser.
Okay.
He's a fraud.
All right. Let's get into it. All right. So our full list here is Sabonis, Jaylen Brown, Karl Anthony Towns, Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Dylan Brooks, Jason Tatum. Although I want to disqualify that one.
Okay.
Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell.
Can I make the case for Rudy Gobert for this award? Because he was like dead, like in the water. They're saying this is the worst trade ever.
Yes,
and
we did that.
Yes,
yeah.
He's probably should win Defensive Player of the Year this year. He probably will.
I think he will. Yeah.
Yeah, and he probably should. And you know, like I think he's kind of beat the allegations. Like he won me over a little bit, which I hated Rudy Gobert, mostly because fans of Rudy Gobert are the most annoying people online. They're the most calculator rat, annoying motherfuckers, making up fake shit like screen assists and D LeBron. Do you remember the tweet from like 2 years ago? Best defensive season ever. He won the quintuple crown in every defensive match. And it was like, shut the fuck up. But turned me into Philip Seymour Hoffman in that movie. The Wolves, I think, are genuine title contenders. I think they're probably my favorite team outside of Boston and the Nuggets to like win the title this year, which is really impressive to have a team that young and a team that prominently features Karl Anthony Towns be like a top three projected possibly winning team. And I just think that is one of those things where like everyone, just because of the optics around the trade, the fact that he started the novel coronavirus and killed millions, and all of the bad things that have come up with Rudy Gobert, I think he did become underrated. And it turns out, no, this is just a guy who's an incredible defensive floor raiser for a team.
Okay. So what I've gathered here is that the large majority of guys that we selected have kind of shit all over themselves in the playoffs. That's really what this is about.
Yes.
Because most of these guys are good regular season players that have had infamous drops in the playoffs that have kind of defined the narrative around them. And look, I still don't think Rudy was the real reason why those Jazz teams failed necessarily. I mean, I think that he was part of the problem because he's such an offensively limited player that they built an offensively tilted team. And then everyone's like, well, what do you want Rudy to do? Guard all five guys on the court? And it's like, well, yes, but also when you're a limited offensive player and they have to put those pieces around you, it does make it so that they put everything on his shoulders on defense. And it's not realistic to build a team that way. But long story short on this, Rudy definitely got shit on way too much. I think the two guys that should be the finalists for this award are Rudy Gobert and Domantas Sabonis.
That's a good one, too.
The reason why is because Sabonis is a guy that, I mean, we talked about the Halliburton trade ad nauseum. It was a bozo trade. You know, we've kind of talked about this Kings team as like no one really discusses them ever as like they're probably now going to fall out of the play-in because of injuries, because Malik Monk's out for, you know, like a month. And that team is just bad. Like, I don't think that people realize this, that that team, like, Herter's had a terrible season.
Yep.
Barnes has had a terrible season.
Also out for the year, by the way.
Yeah. Yep. Keegan Murray has been better on defense, and his offense has kind of regressed, which, you know, look, it happens sometimes with young guys, but if we're talking about what's on the court for them, that team, as we've said before, has really been carried by Fox, Monk, and Sabonis. And of those three guys, based on what I've talked to Kings fans, they're like, Sabonis is easily the most consistent of all of those guys, where he is... night to night, you kind of know what you're going to get from him. Whereas Fox and Monk, their highs are way higher than Sabonis. Like, you know, just like they'll randomly have games where they go off and they look like superstars and all that. But just from a consistency basis, availability, he's pretty much always available. From what you're going to get in terms of his passing, his rebounding, his scoring, all of that shit, it really has kind of, you know, been underrated how he's taken a team that was basically dog shit for 20 years and made them into a respectable franchise. So I think what we're going to have to do here is we're going to have to vote. We're going to have to set up a vote here for Sabonis versus Gobert. And I'll set it up in the comments right now. I had a Scoot and Cade one. This was from months ago that I never finished, but we're going to do Gobert or Sabonis for the Bill Simmons underrated, overrated award. Mm-hmm. Okay.
By the way, if you just sort by VORP, I don't know if people know this. Sabonis is fifth in the NBA, like first team all NBA. If you sort just by VORP, like straight up.
That's like, insane. I mean, like, I will say that those kind of stats might, I think they overrate him a little bit, like the catch-all, like box score stats, just because, yeah, he does get assists, rebounds, points, but also like they run a ton of offense through him. And some of the assists are a little, look, I think some of the assists are legit. And I think some of the assists are a little bit Mickey Mouse in terms of like dribble handoff stuff, not being quite as valuable as like the Jokic level passers, where like he's creating wide open layups for guys at the rim, as opposed to, you know, you might look at their assist numbers and think they're similar level playmakers, but they're just completely different. So, who is we're going to end the voting here. And it looks like Sabonis has won the most overrated that you are underrated. I'm sorry. Yeah, most overrated that you're actually underrated, Bill Simmons Award. So we'll go to the other one now. Congratulations to Sabonis. I know this is a big day for you. People doubted you. Nate Duncan called you the worst all-star of all time when you were on the Pacers. Everyone clowned the Kings for trading Haliburton for Sabonis, and now he has won his first ever Uno-Ball Bill Simmons Award. So I know he's really happy.
Bill is ecstatic, too.
Bill's ecstatic. Bill gets a Bill guy.
I
wanted him on the house. I wanted him on the Celtics badly. I tried to trade Smart for him like 10 times.
I hope I kind of wish that happened just so Bill got to see how fucking bad that would have been. Sabonis the playoff faller with the fucking the Jays. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Well, you guys certainly made out better getting Porzingis, obviously, but yes. I do wonder what he would look like in a situation like that. I mean, we see what he looks like with offensive spacing now. Imagine if he had the defensive kind of insulation on a team like the Celtics, might be able to cover up some of the things that he's kind of not great at on that end. But all right, the next part of this is guy who became so underrated that they're overrated. After I made this list, first off, it was kind of hard for me to make this list. It's not quite as easy as because people are just haters. And like everyone at one point in their career thinks that you know, someone is overrated. But the underrated part is a little bit harder. The majority of these guys are bigs, is what I came up with. Because I feel like bigs are always, oh, that guy's really underrated. I have on my list Bam Adebayo.
Let's go.
Evan Mobley. Miles Turner. Nick Claxton. That's my own. I overrated him a lot.
Yeah.
And hate to do this to him, but Kyle Anderson, who great season on defense, like he always is, but the offense has kind of fallen off a cliff a little bit shooting wise. Jaden McDaniels is another good one. That's actually that's a good nominee too. But I think that would be my list of, yeah, you could throw in someone else too.
The only one that stood out to me when I was looking at it, Mikal Bridges, I feel like has to be in this list too.
I still don't think that Mikal Bridges at any point, we knew this was going to be bad. Like I had a hard time
with
any of the Nets, but everyone who is a knowledgeable person was like, you can't do this. You can't do this so much that like you just give him zero other, you know, like he's a role player. Like he'd be a very, very good role player that can occasionally scale up to be a star type player.
Yeah.
But we all knew he was an offensive three. Like we knew he was a third option. They put him in a place to fail. I feel like I can't really put him on the list with some of these guys who, although I guess the thing is coming into this year was like he was the favorite for most improved player.
Yeah.
And also at one point was like looking like he might make the all-star team. And by the end of the year, he was just completely out of this. So.
Yep.
All right. We'll put Mikal Bridges. I see people saying Derek White in the comments. I had Derek White in here originally, but then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, I don't know. I kind of think that the thing with Derek White is like, in general, yes, he's overrated by nerds, but he's also like, it's kind of undeniable how good he's been this season for the Celtics, even if it is a kind of, you know, an ideal situation for him. He's a very, very good player.
I think the Derek White thing is more like, I'm sure this is going to fall apart next year. Like he will not be as good next season. You know what I'm saying? Like he's just kind of having a good season. I think
it's possible.
Kind of the, thing. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So of all these guys, Bam, Mobley, Turner, Claxton, Kyle Anderson, Jaden McDaniels, Mikal Bridges.
The two Mobley and, Turner both jumped out at me a lot. Mobley, it's kind of hard with Mobley because like he was like his expectations were so high and people were being so insane about him, myself included, that it kind of like made us slow our roll on Wemby when we kind of probably should have been freaking out about Wemby a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? Like, because they're like totally different players. But like, I don't know. Like, it just seems like let's just say Mobley might be a candidate for another category later on in this in this thing too. So, and Miles Turner, I don't know. I feel like Miles Turner was always described as like the prototypical like rim protecting being who could shoot threes and space the floor. Like you would always say like if there was a four who like made your team worse, you would always say, oh, but if you put him with Miles Turner, it would be
If it was like if you had if you had like a Ben Simmons who couldn't shoot or like whatever,
he was
always the nominal answer for that kind of like stretch big, even though every year I'm like, he's a good shooter for a big, but like, he's not really like that. Like he's not Karl Anthony Towns. Like he's not shooting six threes per game and making 40% of them. He's shooting like, I think he shoots like four threes per game and he makes 35. And most of them are pretty easy. It's not that he doesn't have any shooting gravity because they will they'll close out. They will contest on his looks, but they're not quite like he doesn't have crazy gravity where like you can't leave him alone and it opens up the entire paint for everyone else. And like every once in a while with Turner, you catch him on the wrong night, especially these teams that have physical bigs like Hartenstein. It's not even like Jokic and Embiid because no one has an answer for Jokic and Embiid. I don't expect them to. But you catch him on the wrong night where he's going up against like a Nurkic or a Hartenstein or a few years ago, Steven Adams or whoever. And it was just like, man, he looks absolutely terrible on any given night, basically. Yeah, Drummond's another good answer for that. But at the same time, he does have this really rare skill set that like five guys in the NBA have, and it's like Porzingis, Turner, Cat doesn't even really have the rim protection skills that those guys have. So like, it's hard for me to say that he's, I think he got overrated for sure. But I also am like, what is he on a good, is he the third or fourth best player on a good team? Yeah, probably. And that's kind of what he is right now.
I'm not even sure he's like a top 10 like center in the NBA.
All right.
Like,
well, let's run down the top 10 centers in the NBA.
So Jokic and Embiid, mm-hmm. obviously. Just Gobert. Going west. Yeah. Gobert, Bam. Porzingis, Bam. I'm trying to
think. Would you rather have Hartenstein or him?
I'd rather have Hartenstein.
Hartenstein six. Jared Allen,
Anthony mm-hmm. Davis.
We can't, if we're counting Gobert, we can't count Cat too. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I would say Fifth those
Sabonis.
Yeah. Sabonis is 9. And Şengün.
Şengün is 10.
Yeah. So yeah, he's not top 10 anymore.
Yeah.
And I think at one point he was, but that was more because the center position was kind of Wemby. We didn't even
Wemby. Yeah, we didn't say Wemby.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Miles Turner's got to win.
Honestly, like Brook Lopez might be better than him now. Softly cooked Brook Lopez might be better than Miles Turner. I might rather have Brook Lopez.
Yeah, I'm going to go Miles Turner for this one, because if we look at the other guys, they're all like Jaden McDaniels is still young. Evan Mobley's still young. You know, Bam, look, do I think he's a little bit overrated by nerds? Yes. But also he's a playoff performer who's made multiple All-Star games. He's a very good player. I think Miles Turner's got to win this one for sure. But I don't know. I still think I'd like to see what the Pacers look like next year and how they're built next year. Due to the fact that this Siakam thing, remember you literally just said you're like fours who kind of have shooting problems that kind of make your team. Siakam, an aging Siakam, pretty much fits that mold almost perfectly.
Yes.
So if they can figure out the other pieces around Haliburton, him, and Siakam and make a good team, then maybe his value will be more shown, because it was always like, can we just get him to like the Pelicans to play next to Zion or something? And we still haven't really seen that quite yet. But I think Miles Turner is a good guy who was so underrated that he's become overrated. All right, this is going to be everyone's favorite, the next category here. The Mark Wahlberg Irrational Confidence Award, player that is most likely to say they would have stopped 9/11 from happening. I didn't even tell you.
No.
Because I wanted to get your genuine reaction to this category.
I have one player immediately popped into my mind.
Yes. I mean, who?
Jimmy Butler.
Okay, so number one I had is Jimmy Butler, because he literally made this joke before.
Yes.
Number two on this list, I have Patrick Beverley, who would 100% not only stop 9/11 from happening, he would then go on his Barstool podcast and talk about how he stopped 9/11 from happening, just completely exaggerating whatever happened.
He's in the tweet, like teasing the episode, is how I figured out they had box cutters. Breakdown of me stopping 9/11.
And so
Muhammad Atta didn't want that work. Belt to ass. Muhammad Atta couldn't hang.
Soft.
I need an action movie with Pat Bev stopping 9/11. Pat Bev going back in time.
Let's go. 9/11. Oh my god. Jesus Christ.
Oh fuck.
And then his white co-host, they just cut to his white co-host and he's like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. I hired TJ Miller to play that guy, and he's just doing like weird little like quirks, like belt to ass, or more like ass to kick. Everyone's getting mad at him.
So next on the list I had LeBron James, and he would obviously be lying through his fucking teeth. I would have stopped 9/11 100%.
He He's reading like a counter-terrorist insurgency book that he's on like page three on like the ESPN thing. This General Petraeus. I've been reading some of General Petraeus's book, and it seems like, you know, he's got some of this figured out.
What's your favorite part? The table of contents. I would say.
It also seems like he can teach me a lot about covering up the Yes Jewels thing. Actually, hold on. I'm getting to later on in the book, and there's, you know what? Never mind. He's actually not
allegedly. Any better than me.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Faithful LeBron. Mm-hmm. Definitely. He would never. But and then the last one I had here was Giannis Antetokounmpo, because he pulls himself up by his bootstraps, dude. He would have just figured out a way, would have rallied the troops, would have figured out a way to, you know, probably do some sort of Gary Vaynerchuk motivational speech that would have got everyone really pumped up to take down the terrorists.
Giannis fighting the Homeland Security people because he wants the guy's box cutter to prove that he... What's the game box cutter that he overpowered? No, Giannis definitely could have done this. Like, Giannis, if they crash this plane and kill us, you won't be able to have sex again. He locks in. So
no more Oreo milkshakes, dude.
No.
Jesus Christ.
For all of this we just said, I still think it's Jimmy Butler, though. I still think Jimmy Butler is
it's pure. It's got to be Pat Bev or Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, it's either Pat Bev or Jimmy Butler. Is it like who would succeed or who would they can do it?
Well, I was going to say, I think both Pat Bev and Jimmy Butler definitely think they could do it. Jimmy thinks he could have played in the NFL. Pat Bev thinks he can do anything.
Yes.
Somebody
brought up Anthony Edwards. The difference is Anthony Edwards actually does stop 9/11.
Yeah, I would believe
like
it.
raw charisma. Like he's the player who could have stopped 9/11. Yeah.
10 seconds on the shot clock left.
9/11
is not happening if Anthony Edwards is on that plane. The only problem is that I don't even know how old was he. 2 years old.
2 years old. Yeah. Toddler. Yeah.
Anthony. Literally just four.
Still had the aura though to talk the terrorists out.
Yeah.
Of it,
so. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So. The comments are saying Pat Bev, and I think I agree. I think that Pat Bev would, at a minimum, would have the most entertaining lie about how he could do it.
Yes.
And I think that's why he should win. I think Jimmy might be the one that could actually do it, because Jimmy, all these guys are massive, but Jimmy is massive and is also insane.
That's a new Heat Devil Magic just dropped.
Yeah.
Used for good. To stop 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's totally.
He gets Duncan Robinson and Gabe Vincent on the plane with him.
I've been informed that he was not even born. Anthony Edwards was not born on 9/11. He was not alive.
I still think he could do it.
I still believe in him. I think his brain and mom could have figured out.
Yeah. He's piloting his mom like a mech, like a Gundam.
All right. So. The next award on here.
Oh, he was 5 weeks old. Easy money.
Yeah, he's got
easy
it.
Money. He's
not,
got it.
Not a problem. I believe in you, Ant. Not a problem. I believe in you, toddler Ant. Not even toddler. Infant.
Newborn infant. Yeah.
So okay. The next award is the Ewing Theory Award, which is the we know what Ewing Theory is. A good player whose team plays better without them. It's usually the best player. It's usually the best player, but I stretched the definition for this one because there were a few guys that had to be included here. Number one, Darius Garland. The Cavs are 17-7 without him this year. I wanted to do Evan Mobley. I see everyone saying Evan Mobley. The Cavs are actually worse without Evan Mobley if you break it down. I'm sure if you went through game by game, that there might be certain games where they play better when Mobley's on the bench. Maybe the overall net rating, they're better when he's off the court. But their record is actually not great without him. It's very good without Darius Garland. 17-7, like I said. LeBron James. This is just more anecdotal here, because the Lakers have won against the Celtics, and they have two wins against the Bucks without LeBron this year. I'm just saying he's got to be on there. He's got to be on the list. He's got to be considered. Karl Anthony Towns, Wolves have looked pretty good recently. You might be able to take a victory lap on that one. Naz Reid has filled in very well. I know they just had a recent loss that was tough against the Bulls, but other than that, they've looked very good without him. And I don't think that they miss him all that much, at least yet. So I think that he should be included on here. Paolo Banchero, the team is just way better when he's off the court this season. I don't think that it really means anything for his long term. I still believe in Paolo long term as like the dude, but they're just a much better team when he's on the bench this season. And it has to be noted at a minimum. And then the last one that will probably make Sam cry live on air that I have on here is Trae Young. The Hawks are currently 5 games below .500 when Trae Young, on the season, they're 5 games below .500, but when Trae does not play, they are 2 games above .500. So Trae Young is, like I said, incredibly overrated. Everyone knows it except for Sam. So yeah.
Kim, by the way, crazy. Zach LaVine didn't make it on this list. That's nuts.
Right, he's got to be on there. Duh.
Yeah.
He didn't. I mean, they were definitely better in the games that he didn't play, which was the large majority of the season.
Right. I guess that's true. Like, did he miss so many games that it like doesn't matter? But
sure. But I think that he's, because he's been out and they're still like about the same that they were last year.
Right.
And like record wise, I actually think they're better when he doesn't play. And when he did play this year, they kind of looked not great. He has to be considered on the list. I think that's a good also a good choice. So Darius Garland, LeBron James, Karl Anthony Towns, Paolo Banchero, Trae Young, and Zach LaVine. Oh, Şengün. How did I forget Şengün?
Yeah.
Honestly, Şengün might be the winner. Oh, I know it is Mickey Mouse March.
That's what I was just going to say.
Easy.
Yeah.
And even like their best win was against the Thunder without SGA. Like they probably would have done this with Şengün too, but Jalen Green might not have popped quite as much as he did during Mickey Mouse March.
I don't know because the other ones, like, I understand, like all these other ones we've explained, like it's like I kind of understand like what's going on, and like there's been different points in time where like different things were going on, whatever. I Mickey Mouse March, and you, like, it can't be stressed enough, I think they played the Spurs twice, the Trailblazers once, I think they played the Wizards in that stretch. I think they played like every Jazz. Bad team.
Yeah. And every then, bad defense.
Yeah. And then like even the Kings win that they got, like Şengün was back for that one, you know? So
he was in the early in the season or early in the month.
Yes. So, or was there for that one. What, you know what I mean? So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would pick Şengün. I'm honestly kind of leading Garland.
17-7 without him. I know they, I mean, they played their best ball of the season without Garland.
Yeah.
And like other than that stretch, someone pointed this out, they're basically a .500 team if you take away that 2 month stretch when he was mostly out.
Yeah, that's not good. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I like Garland like a lot, but like it's clear like he can't work with Donovan Mitchell. I think he's like a better player than this, but we're talking about Ewing theory, you know what I'm saying? And we're talking about guys who are supposed to make the team better. And I do
that's
think
this that, season, like,
yes,
if you're predicating your value as a player, and a lot of it relies on shooting, and you have a down shooting year, and the other parts of your game are good, but also maybe not maximized when the best player's healthy, when Donovan Mitchell plays, and they might be just as good, if not better, than when, you know, you're out of the lineup. It's a tough look at a minimum. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look good for Darius Garland, considering, you know, 2 years ago, like, we had this conversation in the Discord the other day, like, I think it's pretty obvious everyone would probably take Tyrese Maxey over Darius Garland now, and like 2 years ago, Garland was looking that he was going to be on the track that Maxey's on now, where it's like dynamic, smaller guard, but dynamic, very speedy, bursty, plays well on the ball, off the ball, can shoot threes, can play make, and is just not really been that guy. Now, look, maybe Bill said on his podcast, he was like, I'd love to see Garland get his own team. And I'm like, that's just a complete misdiagnosis of who Darius Garland is. Because the thing is that if Darius Garland is your best player, your team isn't going to be good. And unless you have a situation like 2 years ago where you have rookie Mobley, who was awesome, Jared Allen, who was, having an all-star level season for himself, Lauri Markkanen the year before he popped, like there really has to be a perfect context for your team to even be like play-in level good. If Darius Garland's your best player, in reality, if he's on your team, you want him to be your second or third best player. And right now he should be. And he's honestly their fourth best player. Like when you could, like, I know Mobley's been very disappointing, but when you consider the defensive impact that Mobley can still have, I think that he's their fourth best player. Yeah. And that's, I think that he's got to win the award here, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, so let's appoint him. I was going to say him or Cat. Cause Cat was the other one I was thinking where it's like very similar where it's
the numbers
like,
don't really back it up with Cat. Like they're a better team with him. Problem. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not, they're not like the gap between where they are with him and without him isn't big, but they're a better team with Cat. So, all right. So, winner is Darius Garland for that one. I think that that's pretty much consensus. Yeah. But yeah, so, all right. So the next one is the dunked on scam contract award. So this is the guy who is the best veterans minimum contract in the NBA. We already did the best value contracts on the Patreon. If you want to hear that, go subscribe to the Patreon. We did a whole episode on that. This is just veteran minimum guys. So these are the best veteran minimum guys in the NBA this season. It's not a long list. There's not usually if you're on the veterans minimum, you kind of suck ass.
Yes.
But at one point in the season, either throughout the whole season or at one point in the season, all of these guys had a moment, I would say, at a minimum. So I have Isaiah Joe, Kelly Oubre, Malik Beasley, Najee Marshall, and Bol Bol. No rookie veterans minimums on this either, by the way. They don't count. Even Isaiah Joe's kind of a cheating one because the Sixers cut him during his rookie deal. Derek Jones Jr. That's a good one. I didn't even think of Derek Jones Jr. That's someone that I probably should have included. Dante Exum was signed with the mini MLE, so he did not count. He was someone that I would have included on here if he was just a veterans minimum.
Sam Hauser?
Sam Hauser's on his rookie deal.
Oh, just vet minimums.
This okay. is just yeah. vet minimums.
Okay.
So anyone who is on their rookie deal, Lonnie Walker is someone that I considered, but it looks like he's pretty much regressed across the board since his really hot start. I think he should be mentioned. I think that Lonnie Walker had a really good start to the season, hasn't really held up quite as much throughout the whole season. But those are the guys. I mean, there's one player I think is the clear best player on this list, and I think it's Isaiah Joe.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think it's pretty open and shut. I mean, he's a rotation player for a team that might win the West still.
Yeah, I mean, he's like their sixth or seventh man, but he's like a very important piece for them. And like his net rating is like absolutely off the charts when he plays. Like he's a guy that comes in when they plug him in off the bench. He's been awesome. But the thing about Isaiah Joe is, like I said, is this cheating? He's only in his fourth season. If the rules existed now the way that they do with the contracts, he would be in the final year. He would still be on the Sixers, by the way, and I want to jump off a building. But the new second round exception would make it so that he basically is still on his rookie deal. The reason why he's not on his rookie deal anymore is because under the old rules, the Sixers only signed him using the MLE. They could only sign him to a 3-year deal. There was no second round exception. So it is tough for me to choose here.
I think Oubre is a really good one too.
Yeah.
Oubre's been great. You know, like honestly, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and kind of like, he's really impressed me because I kind of thought he was a bozo who was on his way out of the league. And yeah, he's done a good job at being a contributing player to a good team. I think Oubre is for me, it's either Oubre or
Isaiah Joe.
Yeah. Cause those guys are actual like rotation. These other guys that you brought up, like, might be rotation players, but aren't rotation players in a way that like really matters to me.
Well, Derek Jones Jr. is the one people in the comments are saying does matter because he's been really good this year. When I was upset over Oubre not getting signed, I wanted us to sign Derek Jones Jr. I thought that he was the guy, defensive specialist, that, you know, in a simplified role might be able to kind of figure some things out. The shot has been way better for him, but this is the You Know Ball Awards, and I think Isaiah Joe and Kelly Oubre have had much more.
They have a lot of psychic, there's a lot of psychic energy in those two players.
Exactly. On the You Know Ball Awards, I feel like it has to be Isaiah Joe or Oubre. And yeah, I was wrong about Oubre. So this is not, if you want to go definitively who's the best player and who has had a better season, Isaiah Joe, obviously, and Malik Beasley and Derek Jones Jr., you could probably make the argument that they've had a better season than Oubre. But since this is the You Know Ball podcast, and because Oubre has owned me so heavily, I think I have to go with Kelly Oubre here as the winner for the Scam Contract Award. He's been, like I said, he's been up and down. He's had a month of where he shoots like 17% from three, and you're like, oh God, this is why I didn't want Kelly Oubre. And he makes like bozo decisions. But the high moments where like he'll just randomly drop 30 points and like give you good defense and steals and blocks and like is genuinely really made, at least he's been more locked in on that end. I don't know if he's made like massive leaps because I didn't watch his defense a ton when he was on other teams. But he's impressed me all season. And Oubre owned me, so I have to give him the nod here. And also, he's really good looking. So good looking people should win awards.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. He's what this contract, this award is all about. He'll probably get a bag after this, to be honest, because he's a wing who can do some things on both ends of the court. So, all right. This is the annual Chris Vernon, Hey Stinks Award. The least valuable player in the NBA this season. And I did not make any restrictions here. I included rookies.
Well, that's going to be my first question. Is there a rookie?
No, it's every, okay. There's no one safe. Yeah. Yeah. This is not,
well, I already have a pretty good idea of who I'm picking.
It's not a safe space. If you're going to cry because we make fun of 19-year-olds, go listen to another podcast. Okay. Grow up.
All the comments all just went scoot, 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 scoot. like I watched like six of them come in at the same time. So
yeah. Are you triggered by my comments about
there we go. Yeah.
Go listen to another podcast, liberal.
This isn't your mom's media. This is truth telling.
That's right. You know, ball, no holding back. Yeah. So
this is the Matt Walsh NBA show. Real God, he's the worst. He's the worst fucking guy.
We're actually having Steven Crowder on next week to talk about his wife leaving him, which I thought would be a really cool way to introduce that.
Louder with Crowder. Not Jay Crowder.
Folks, Steven. Have you heard this one?
Yeah.
Okay, so my list of guys here are Malachi Branham, Scoot Henderson, Johnny Davis, David Roddy, and landlord Pat Connaughton. I threw in one veteran guy who has just kind of had a shitty year for a good team, and the majority are just younger guys that have been objectively horrible.
No Jordan Poole?
I didn't have Jordan Poole on here because I felt like over the last month and a half, Jordan Poole hasn't been as bad. But we did draft him number one in the worst rotation player draft, and he was terrible for like the majority of the season. He's going, Mickey Mouse March might have redeemed him from being one of the five worst players in the NBA this season.
That's fair enough. I mean,
even if it's fake, even if he's been terrible.
So I'll say this. Statistically, it's Scoot. Okay, and that's not really debatable, I don't think. Scoot's like, he's had multiple games of -50 this year. Plus minus, like
Scoot went 3 of 17 last night against the Magic.
Yes.
Yeah. And fell over the game winning shot. I actually felt bad for him. It kind of sucked.
Let me
Oh like, no, he finished 16. My bad. I guess he made some shots down the street.
Okay. So there we go. So let me make a Malachi Branham case though, okay?
Okay.
It's like impossible for them to be that bad, you know, like with Wemby. He's on the Spurs, right? I'm making sure.
He is on the Spurs, yes.
Yeah. As I say, it's like impossible for I was wondering if they cut him or something or traded him to the Raptors. For some reason, I thought he was a Raptor for a second. And I was like, uh-oh, wait, hold on.
You might be thinking of Jordan Wara.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But like, it's impossible for... I watched some games and like Malachi Branham was like standout bad.
Yeah.
And I think that there needs to be some disrespect shown to the Spurs as a collective team for being bad. They still only have like 18 wins, I think, which is insane when you have a player as good as Wemby. That's like almost impossible. So I don't know. I just spiritually, I feel like Malachi Branham or another Spurs player has to be like in consideration here for this.
Okay. So I hear you. I think that is definitely part of the reason why Branham has been so impactful in a negative way is because when he plays, he cooks a ton. Like I've seen games where it's just like, well, this is way too much Malachi Branham doing too much. I just want to read off Johnny Davis's stats to you real quick. I know he's only played like 500 minutes this year, so that's kind of hard to put him in this category. But he is averaging in 11 minutes per game, he is averaging 2.6 points on 36% from the field, 25% from three, 1.4 rebounds, 0.5 assists. He's basically been, I mean, even in not a lot of time he's played, he's been pretty clearly the worst player in the NBA. Like, Scoot's impact stats and his counting stats, I'm sure, are just as bad. I'm sorry, his counting stats are better. His impact stats are probably similar to Johnny Davis's. I've seen Scoot have moments where I'm like, I get it. Like, he has random games where when the shot is falling from mid-range, where he can get to the basket and make some impressive finishes. Like, he's had moments in the NBA. He's just very, very young and raw still. And I'm kind of like not even one of those guys that's like, Scoot will figure it out. Like, the large majority of guys that are as bad as Scoot don't even become as good as Darius Garland or De'Aaron Fox, who are always used as the example. And I'm not positive that Scoot will figure it out, but I also thought Jalen Green was like the worst player of all time until recently. And he's at least shown that he's going to hang in the league for a while. So Johnny Davis is just like, if you listed out all the worst players in the NBA, he's the worst. He is the worst player in the NBA.
Scoot? Is he like, yes.
He has a negative 7.3 BPM this year.
That's pretty nuts.
And the thing is, the Scoot thing, I expect rookie guards to be kind of bad. Scoot's been really bad. But, like, Johnny Davis is in year two, and he's 3 years older than Scoot, I think. Like, he's 22 this year, I believe. Or no, he's 21. So he's a year and a half, 2 years older than Scoot. And, like, there's no... like, if you tell me in 4 years Scoot can kind of figure it out and become like a rotation guard, I wouldn't be shocked. Maybe even he has more upside. I don't know. I don't really know what to do. Johnny Davis is 22 now. Like, there's no chance that this guy is ever an NBA player. There's just zero chance. Yeah. There's no way.
He is lowest. I'm looking at it. If you sort by guys who have played more than like 400 minutes.
Yeah.
Actually, no, that's not true. Jalen McDaniels is a little worse.
But yeah, I also considered him on the list here too. I just figured, the thing about Jalen McDaniels is that he's so irrelevant that I didn't even like. I was like, we could put him in here, sure, but also like he's a role player on a bad team, and like Johnny Davis is a historical level bust. like that's the difference. Like McDaniels was at least playable at one point in his NBA career with the Hornets and for a little bit for the Sixers.
Yeah, man, that's it's pretty brutal. No, I mean, I think you're right. I think Johnny Davis has way less of a chance to. I still haven't totally given up on Scoot as like a player. So
yeah, I mean, I don't think you should give up on a guy after. I think with all of these younger guys, I don't think it's time has proven that like dudes can get better. Like especially these guys that are 19 or 20, like they can have really. I don't think he's going to be even this good, but like Jalen Suggs was terrible 2 years ago. And I think that there we could make the exception. And like last year, you maybe could have made the same argument for Johnny Davis. But like we're in year two now, and like he's on a bad team again, getting like chances. And it's just not happening for him. Like it's just there's no way. Like, I think that he has to be considered the worst player in the NBA.
All right. I agree with that.
He's also bad in the G League. Scoot was good in the G League.
That's true. Yeah. That's a huge distinction there.
So I'll read off Johnny Davis's regular season stats from the G League. Okay, ready?
Okay.
So if you don't count the Showcase Cup where he played a handful of games. Oh, no, that was last year. So he only played regular season this year. God, dude.
Oh, God.
All right. So in the 6 G League games that he played this year, he shot 36% from the field, 21% from 3, 66% from the line. He averaged 8.5 points, 2.2 assists, and 3.8 rebounds, and played 27 minutes a game.
Jalen Hood-Schifino, this is what you have to live up to. You're stepping into some big shoes here.
Yeah, next year we might be having a conversation about him.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Johnny Davis was drafted 2 picks before Jalen Williams. I forgot about that. That range of the draft has actually turned out to be pretty good. Duren was selected there. Mark Williams, Jalen Williams. Tari was a few picks later. We wanted them. On draft night, we laughed at how at this pick.
Yes. That was one of the things. It was one of those. It was like Papa Giannis, where it was like one of the picks where everyone was like, what?
Yeah.
And it was like.
We saw it coming from a mile away. We were like, they're going to pick him. And it's going to be terrible because this is what the Wizards do. So Johnny Davis is least valuable player, even if he doesn't quite play as much to be as negatively impactful as some of these other guys. So
I also remember the San Antonio pervert guy who got waived being a pick like that too.
Primo. He was a crazy. Like the difference between Davis was projected to go in that range. Primo was supposed to be like a late first, early second. Yeah. That's why we were like, whoa,
Those are the ones I remember. I remember Johnny Davis. I remember Primo. I remember Papa Giannis as being the ones where everyone was like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To be fair, on the other side of that coin, Cam Johnson. Great pick.
Terry Rozier.
Yeah.
Another one from going way back.
Yeah. So sometimes that actually does work out. All right, let's go down to the next spot here, which is the Ball Don't Stop One Dribble Pull Up Award, the best hooper in the NBA. So you could go superstar here, you could go all-star here. I just went with players that are aesthetically pleasing and kind of get a bad rap.
Okay.
So I have Jalen Green.
Okay.
Colin Sexton, who had a fucking incredible season this year, by the way. We talked about it. Like his pull-up shooting was insane this year. Cam Thomas. D'Angelo Russell, DeMar DeRozan, Peyton Pritchard, and Cam Whitmore was my list. I could do Kyrie, but I think Kyrie's just like, we get it.
Disrespectful to Kyrie to put him in
this. This award should be named after Kyrie. It's named after Ball Don't Stop, but if we were to rank like who, if you ask a random player that likes to or random person that likes to watch the game for aesthetic purposes, Kyrie, we've talked about it. Like Kyrie is incredible to watch when he's on.
I might push back and say that DeMar DeRozan's probably a little too good for this.
Okay. We'll drop DeMar from
I was going to say I'm excusing DeMar from this conversation. He's stamped. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm sure Paige Brucker's would have also had a tweet about how good Jamar is. Yeah. It's very funny that Paige Bruckers is our new Hooper, or our Hooper pilled tweets.
Yeah, because she doesn't we don't have college guys players this year. Because all the college guys players was like, oh cool, I want to watch Zach Edey post up 70 times in a game and just easily dunk over everyone. Like
I'm not watching that. Yeah, that's why we're all Wolfpack fans, because our god DJ is the only he's gonna save us from Donovan Klingon and Stephen Castle winning the NBA title. Sorry, Dredd.
I had this exact thought last night while watching the games, because I was watching the LSU Iowa game when Caitlin Clark was just like destroying.
Yes.
I had the exact thought when everyone was destroying Haley Van Lith. I was like, the women's basketball has made it, because everyone is slandering it like it's the dudes game. Like this is like, this is the moment where everyone is on board, because, and then I saw a tweet that had the exact same thing. It's like, they're tweeting like it's a random March Madness or NBA playoff game right now. It was awesome.
Yeah. Everyone was watching it. Poor Haley Van Lith got like memed into the shrug.
Yeah.
Like became a whole thing. Like, even Bob Ryan, the fossil of a Boston Globe writer, tweeted that he gave them the biggest stamp of all, which was saying that they weren't as good as the old heads like Lisa Leslie and like some of the old ones, which is just, that's how you know you've made it.
Unbelievable. Yeah. When the cranks are like, no offense, but in my day, the women's basketball players were way better. Yeah, no, completely have made it. Incredible.
Peter just said, I didn't see his follow-up tweet because I guess everyone was making fun of him, said no good deed goes unpunished. I try to spotlight worthy players of the past and people misinterpret it as a knock on today's brilliant female basketball stars. I should have known better. Saying no good deed goes unpunished like Lisa Leslie needed your fucking charity, dude. Like, everyone knew Lisa Leslie. I'm sorry. Like, she was like, I grew up reading Sports Illustrated for kids. Like Lisa Leslie.
Yeah, she had the first dunk in the WNBA, right?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember thinking that was fucking cool. Like, shut up, Bob.
Yeah. Oh my God, so funny. Yeah. No, what an act of service you did, Bob Ryan, by defending the honor of the 90s and 2000s women's basketball players. Thank you.
No good deed goes unpunished. Yeah. Shut the fuck up. Goddamn.
But yeah. No, it's been awesome to see. It's been a lot of fun. And WNBA, please get a team in Philadelphia. That would be great. So
contract the Sun. Give Maine a team.
So yeah, Maine, the Mainers.
Yeah.
Yes. The Cooper Flag Revolution. The flags.
Yes.
So all right. So who do we think wins this award? The nominees we had again are Jalen Green, Colin Sexton, Cam Thomas, D'Angelo Russell, Peyton Pritchard, and Cam Whitmore. I had Cam Whitmore on here because I was absolutely stunned by how few assists he has. Cam Whitmore has half the amount of assists that Robert Covington has this year.
That's nuts.
Do you know how many games Robert Covington has played this season?
I'm going to guess 12.
Robert Covington has played 29 games.
Wow. And he has, and how many has Cam Whitmore played? It's like 70, like most of them.
I think Cam Whitmore has played about 50 games. Hold on one second. But still, I could be wrong on this. He had one assist last game. So he's played 39 games. I apologize, Cam Whitmore. I forgot he did have a stretch where he was injured, and he had another stretch where he played in the G League. But still, he on the season in 39 games has 19 assists. That is like
that's awesome. Pretty nuts. Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
That's pretty good. But also still positive OBPM, and like most metrics are like he's pretty good. Like he's just like he is kind of the Hooper that might cross over, is what I'm trying to get at here.
Yeah.
Even without passing.
So like it's pretty interesting because like if you look at like Colin Sexton and Cam Thomas, I think are opposite ends of the spectrum here, where like Colin Sexton is actually hooping in a way that like makes his team better. Sure. Now, given that the Jazz are like not good. And that probably wouldn't work a lot of the time, but he's like actually contributing to winning on the team, whereas like Cam Thomas is like actively destroying the Nets season in like real time. So like
he's been passed more recently. Nets fans have told me that, and I checked the assist numbers and they match. They match. Okay. Like he actually, in his defense, it's been better. It is Mickey Mouse March, Mickey Mouse March just ended, but still, Cam Thomas in the last few weeks has had a 6-assist game, a 7-assist game, a 6-assist game, a 4-assist game, a 4-assist game, a 5-assist game. He has the ball a lot.
Yeah.
To be fair, you're going to get assists sometimes if that happens, but still, anyway, definitely represents the I kind of think Jalen Green's got to get this one.
Because
he's kind of, look, once again, we talked about it in the Mickey Mouse March episode. I want to see it for a bigger sample. But he's kind of, all the Hoopers might have been a little bit right about him. You know what I mean? Like, they might have been right about the fact that he could be more than what he's been. His first few years in the NBA, he was bad. The team was bad. He struggled for the majority of this season, and he's kind of figured some things out. Now, maybe he's just a, you know, empty calorie stat guy, whatever, and he doesn't turn in. But, like, it's possible that he turns out to be a guy, and, like, from an aesthetic standpoint, when he's on, he looks like a star. Like, he looks great. And I do think that he needs to probably win this, because I saw someone arguing he should be in the most improved player conversation, and I was like, he was not good for like 40 games. like maybe most improved in season, sure. Like from October to now. All right, I understand that. But just from a aesthetic standpoint, his game has been really pleasing to watch. And also just from like the Hoopers might have been right about him. Jalen Green might win. So
I'll co-sign that.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go Jalen Green for that one.
He also contributes to the Hooper mindset in all of his value coming when it like doesn't really matter anymore.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like
when the stakes are at their lowest.
Yes, as I say, the empty calories thing is like off the charts here. So
yeah,
it is
perfect. Doesn't care about age gap discourse either. That's a Hooper on the court and off the
court. That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. That's something I endorse.
Yeah, get your 40-year-old girlfriend pregnant. We love to see it. So, all right, the first annual Jim Park Worst Coach in the NBA Award. I threw you a bone because I knew you were going to make me include him anyway, and I put Quinn Snyder on here, even though I think you're batshit insane. I think that the Hawks roster is mid, and I think that that's why they're mid, but I included them because I knew you were going to make me include him anyway, so he's on here.
Yeah. I don't. I. That's fine. I don't. I'm not actually going
to. I'm not arguing it.
I'm not actually going to advocate for it right now. Not the time and place. I just I'll let history vindicate me.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah.
Chauncey Billups, I had on this list. That Blazers team should not be winning like 19 games again. He has never been a good coach.
No.
He is third straight year where I think he's going to win 20 less than 25 games. I might be wrong. I think they might have won like 27 one year.
He doesn't have a point. Wasn't he like hired to like get Dame to not be mad?
Yeah, and now he's gone and like what's the point?
Right.
So I have him on here. I had to throw Steve Kerr on here because it is the Jim Park Award.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And look, I think the Warriors roster is also kind of in a similar situation in the West. Is just really good this year, and that's why they've fallen behind. And also, like, they have an old team, so, like, they don't have availability from guys. Draymond loses his mind every once in a while, and they lose him. But Steve Kerr probably could have done us a slightly better job with this roster, probably. Yeah.
When was the last time a guy went to the media saying that I should play more, and he was right?
Yeah, I mean, Kuminga was vindicated there. That's true.
No, I feel like that doesn't happen a lot. I don't know. Steve Kerr, like, this is mostly Bob Myers' fault. But Steve Kerr, that entire franchise is full of Steph merchants. Yeah. And while Steve Kerr is not at the top of that list, like some of the front office guys are, he's on that list. Yeah. You know, he's not an anything coach. He's like a very normal average coach who's
vibes curator.
Yeah, exactly.
Four. I went Bill Simmons here.
Let's go.
House, are we sure Papa's still good?
Hey, again.
If you want to make the argument that Wemby is like a top 15 player in the NBA, which I kind of think
I do. I do want to make that case. Yeah.
So like, if that's the case, and I know he got better throughout the course of the season, and I know that their roster isn't great, they should have won more than however. They're going to finish with like 20 wins. And one of those wins came without Wemby, which might be kind of in his favor. But still, like, I just don't think that roster should be with Wemby on it. With, I know Vassell's been in and out of the lineup, but like, I don't know. I think they should have won more games than they did at a minimum.
I agree.
So that's why Pop's on here. But their Sohan
thing is like,
that was one of the biggest weird decisions I've ever seen for like a month and a half, 2 months. It was just like, there are obvious coaching decisions you could point to and say that's a bad idea, and that was one of the biggest ones of this entire season. So
yes,
Monty Williams.
I mean, that's a leader in the clubhouse, right? Like,
yeah, I understand why, because like he didn't even want to be here.
Right,
I don't even want to be around anymore. Type shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
this is money. He's there for the bag. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not really indicting Monty as like a basketball coach. I think he's just kind of, he's doing office space. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just showing up to work. Yeah,
exactly. He's phoning it in. When I kind of picked up on this when I watched them during the losing streak, where I was just like, he makes a lot of bad decisions, whether it's like not challenging calls, rotational decisions. The all bench lineups with a roster as bad as they have is like, look, I'm not saying Cade or Ivy or Duren or whoever would have been able to carry lineups, but like to have all of those guys sitting at once, what's the point of this whole thing? Like, are you trying to win games? Are you trying to develop talent? Because you have done neither. That's what I've gotten to the bottom line here, is that Chris Paul and Devin Booker probably made him look a lot better than he actually is. And that's something that Chris Paul's done a lot throughout his career, because he's like having a coach on the floor, basically. Exactly. So, yeah. And then my last one I threw on here was Darko. I can't remember his last name. I literally just wrote down Darko.
The McDonald's. The McDonald's. We're all going out for ice cream, coach.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes. The let's have a pizza party, coach.
Yeah,
so I love it. It's like, let's have a pizza party to a group of young millionaires.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny, dude. Like, Will pointed this out, because you know, I think the pushback would be like, well, we're trying to lose games, we're trying to keep our pick.
Sure.
And Will pointed this out. Why the fuck would you ever want your pick to roll over to next year? Like, do you think you're suddenly going to be good next year? Because I got a newsflash for you. You're not. Like, you're still going to be very bad.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably be better than 23 wins, but not much better. And then that's the worst pace to be in, because it's top six protected again next year, I think. And it's like, oh, cool, we just gave the eighth pick of the draft to the Spurs.
Like you're in a spot right now where Klingon is going to be off the board. You know what I'm saying? Like, who? Like, this draft is just not, like, you know, and there's other good players available, good-ish, but, like, you're going to be able to get those guys at like 14 or something like that in like most years. If you're going to be bad, just get the fucking pick out of the way. Like, I don't think they should have tanked. I think that's insane that if they did this on purpose, it's an insane thing to do.
Down the stretch, they've just been playing like, God, like guys that like just have no business being in the NBA. Like, I watched them play against the Sixers the other day, and I was just like, this is a tough look when a lot of your guys are out. Like, look, I knew they blew up the roster halfway through the year. It is tough just to trade like your two best players, be a new coach, young team, all that shit. I totally understand. I still think they should have won more than 23 games. Like, that's like, and like, I don't think they're going to win. They might lose out. And like, if they lose out, like winning 23 games in your first season, even with all of the things that we mentioned, it's not a good look. And like, I don't know what he does. Like, every time I watch the Raptors, I'm like, what is this guy? They don't make adjustments. Their rotations were kind of all over the place. Like, I don't think that there's anything he does except for maybe be a good vibes guy. And like, that is something that I can't really say. And it's also hard to have good vibes when you're losing all the time. Like, that's another part of it. But But yeah, Javon Freeman Liberty, that was his name, who started the last few games. Yeah. I mean, he's like a two-way guy. Like,
yeah, Russillo said that name on the podcast before. Yeah. By the way, speaking of beating the odds, Doc Rivers coaching his way out of this conversation after the start the Bucks got off to once he took over. But I don't think I can argue with it. I think all of those guys are worse than Doc Rivers.
Doc, I think they're 13-14 with Doc as coach. Great, but also, you know, Doc's just going to flip the switch in the playoffs. That's coming. Don't worry about it. Yeah. No.
Dude, how funny would it be if Doc won with this fucking Bucks team?
That would be,
that would be really funny.
That would probably be the funniest outcome of anything that could happen.
Yes. That honestly might be like if the Celtics don't win the title this year, it'll be an abomination for the Celtics. They're never going to win the title if they don't win it this year. But that would be, I would be okay with it if that happened, because that's so fucking funny.
The funniest outcome is for me personally would either be obviously from my personal enjoyment standpoint would be the Sixers either beating the Bucks or the Celtics in the first round and then losing to whoever they face. The Knicks, Will said that before. He's like, they're going to beat one of those teams and then they get to the second
round. Still lose in the second round. They lose
to Orlando, he said, in the second round. Honestly, I'm not even joking. I would take it. I know it sounds insane to get a win over the Bucks or the Celtics in a playoff series and then go into the offseason with cap space and be like, we can figure this out. I would still do it. I would absolutely take beating Giannis or Tatum in a playoff series even if they didn't get to the conference finals. I would absolutely love it. But all right, so who do we think is the worst? Honestly, the worst coach out of this list, in my opinion, is Chauncey Billups.
I was going to say Monty.
Monty's roster is worse than Chauncey's, and they're going to finish with around the same amount of wins, I think. Maybe that's wrong. The Blazers have 19 wins, and the Pistons still only have 13, so that's tough. They are tanking down the stretch. I'll say this much about Monty. I know at one point Monty has been a coach who has coached a team to the playoffs and hasn't done great things there, but I know it was a Mickey Mouse finals appearance. He got to the finals. They won 60 plus games in a season. Chauncey Billups has done absolutely nothing in his career to justify any of this.
That's true.
What has he ever done?
Be the worst finals MVP of all time.
Well, Iguodala probably.
Yeah, I was gonna say, actually, yeah, I thought about Iguodala.
Chauncey was a much better player than Iguodala.
But yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
The worst best player on a championship team. How about that?
I'm talking about as a coach, but yes.
Yes.
I would go Chauncey. Do we think it's Chauncey or Monty? Because they've both been pretty terrible this year.
You make some good points. I'll give you this one. Somebody had the stat about Monty without Chris Paul, though, and how his record is 300. And that made me
That's pretty bad. But he's coached Chris Paul for most of his career. He coached him in New Orleans, too, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it is he's been bad with Chris Paul for a long time. So that's what I'm saying. He might be hiding. He might be a Chris Paul person.
Right. Yeah. All right. So let's run through these last few awards because we've been going for an hour and a half here. So the Kevin Durant bounce back award. So this is someone that bounced back either from an injury or kind of just sucking or whatever. Basically the comeback player of the year.
You unplugged your microphone, I think, at some point, or something happened. Your sound got weird.
I did. I apologize.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Sorry.
So I have on here for the Kevin Durant Bounce Back Player of the Year Award / Comeback Player of the Year, I have Kawhi Leonard, who played the most games that he's played since I think he was with the Spurs this year. He's played a ton of games compared to what he's used to playing, and he's played at a very high level. Jonathan Isaac, who has played the most games since Biden's come into office, which is, I think, related now that it's in an election year. We have Porzingis, who really just came back to relevance and played games for the second straight year. Duncan Robinson, who I thought...
Fucking God. Sorry, I did a reaction.
I I thought he was done. I was like, Duncan Robinson is a worse contract, whatever. Last year in the playoffs, Satan mode. This year carries over. He's been a better player this year overall. And then the fifth guy I had on this list was Norm Powell, who was kind of maligned, was called like the worst contract in the NBA, or one of the worst contracts in the NBA, has had a nice season for them. Very important with the very important to the Clippers' success and playing off of those stars. So
no Zion, huh?
Zion's a good one. I didn't say Zion. That's a very good one. Actually, Zion might be the best example here, because we were like, even during the season, we're like, is Zion done?
Yeah. Zion's, I that was the one when I saw this, when you saw this one, I said, oh, we'll probably end up picking Zion. So that's the one that I'm the most, and this one might be like, I might be psychologically weighing this one too much, because I had written Zion off. I was like, okay, I'm done believing that Zion will be an important player in the NBA.
Right.
Was maybe that's on me for like giving up too early on him, but I like genuinely thought that. Like, so
yeah, I mean, really, that I agree. I think that was kind of after the in-season tournament, that was kind of the thought, was like, oh, Zion's not that guy anymore. And like, we were like, what is there a historical example? I remember going through and like reading about like Larry Johnson and like a guy who like was an athletic freak and like popped really early, was on the Dream Team, was this crazy prospect, number one overall pick. And then he just kind of, you know, was a guy. And that's what I thought was going to happen for Zion. It was hard for me to imagine. And now like he might make all NBA.
Yeah. So
like the Pelicans are going to be a top six seed, and he's been really good the last two or three months of the season. Yeah. I think that I honestly think you're right. I think Zion should win.
Yeah, I think Zion's the best example of it. It just, and it's the highest stakes one too, because it's like literally changes the Pelicans franchise from like, all right, time to tank again, or and now they're back to, you know, okay, we could like they could be in the Western Conference Finals. I don't think it's not likely, but I think it's possible they could be in the Western Conference Finals.
Yes, they could win a playoff series. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So Zion wins the comeback player of the year, aka the bounce back Kevin Durant award. How about the Ben Simmons most disappointing player? I have, and by the way, you could be disappointing for a multitude of reasons, like DeAndre Ayton, who's on my list, Evan Mobley, who's on my list, Darius Garland, Anfernee Simons, who I thought could have really seized an opportunity this year to lead a team, and you know, is still one of the worst defenders in the NBA. Kevin Huerter, who had a really bad year after really popping for the Kings last year. Quentin Grimes, who has been absolutely terrible with this limited time he had with the Pistons, and was very disappointing with the Knicks in a big year for him. I thought he was going to be big because it's basically a contract year. He's going to get paid after the year. And then this one is just a personal one that I included in here. And this is more because my expectations for the player were probably way too high, but I thought Devin Booker was going to be an MVP candidate. And I don't think he's been that at all. I think he's been like a guy that might not even make all NBA. And I kind of am, I'm just disappointed. I thought that he could have been one of the top five or six players in the NBA this year. Early in the season, it was looking like he was making a leap as a playmaker, and I was like, maybe this is his Harden season where he led the league in, maybe not lead the league in assists, he's not that level of playmaker, but like kind of a leap within a career where he's 27, 28, and he's really taking the step up after last year's playoffs. So I was just really disappointed with his season, and I think that he's not quite the guy that I thought he was going to be, even though he's still a really, really good NBA player. And last night absolutely destroyed. Like, he still has games where, like, you could say this about a ton of stars, but like, he still has games like he had last night against the Pelicans where it's just like, oh my God. He had 52-9-3. So I wrote this yesterday, and then he had 52-9-3 on 19 of 28 from the field. And I expected those kind of games this season from him. So that's where I would be. And I look, I get people say, oh, he needs a point guard, whatever. Like, I don't know. I think that he should be the point guard. I expected that from him this year. I expected him to take that leap as a passer and playmaker and become that kind of guy. And he's been a much better passer and playmaker this year. But yeah, I'm putting him on the list.
Can I go off script with one?
Yes.
That is a little sneaky because the team's actually doing pretty well. But
sure.
I'm kind of disappointed with Franz this year.
Franz is definitely a good one. I mean, yeah. And the thing about Franz is that we expected him to take this step in year three. Yeah. And the shooting is really the thing that's the most concerning, because the shooting has just fell off a cliff. Everything else has been pretty much the same, if not better. But part of the reason which made him such a great Swiss Army knife two-way wing was that he also could shoot on top of all of the other stuff. And the shooting just not being there this year, I think that, I expected him to be all-star level good this year. And, he's been very good. And like I said, when Paolo sits, the team's really good and he can carry a bench unit and stuff. But, I would like to see him get back to where he was before in the three-point shooting.
And everything else has gone really well for that Orlando team besides that. You know what I'm saying? I feel like if Franz were better, and I think it's kind of – it's buried because Orlando has still kind of exceeded expectations and had, a pretty good year.
Yeah.
So it's not as big of a deal. But, if Franz were, having a normal year and, shooting the ball pretty well, I feel like they had a real chance to, host a – I think they could have hosted a playoff series this year.
Sure.
I think they
might be able to 4-5, right? Yeah.
Cause the Knicks are the hospital Knicks are, in
Franz's defense, the team is really good when he's on the court still, but I think that they need him to be a good shooter because they just have so few shooters outside of him that if he was able to be that guy, then it would be massively beneficial to the team and help their offense just get out the mud more, because their offense just gets stuck in the mud way too often. So Franz is a good one to include on here. I mean, to fit the vibe of the award personally, because Ben Simmons is a guy who peaked really early and just didn't really improve, I feel like Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and DeAndre Ayton are the three kind of finalists for me here.
Yeah. And I almost want to say Garland again, but I don't want to pick on him.
But it's
twice.
My thing with Garland is he had a bad shooting year too. It's kind of similar to the Franz thing. And he has a larger sample of shooting good. And I think that will bounce back next year. And that's if that's the case, then I honestly think it's Evan Mobley. And here's why. Mobley is still a good defensive player, but I don't know. I just feel I don't know if he can play the five regularly, maybe in the playoff small ball five lineup. Sure. Sometimes in the right matchup. And then he's become an improved shooter, but he never shoots threes. Yeah. He's made 19 all year. That doesn't move me at all. I don't care. That doesn't mean anything. He hit the game winner against the Sixers from three, and I literally just went, whatever. If Evan Mobley hits that shot, Evan Mobley hits that shot. I don't care about the shot too much. And for where we thought he was supposed to be, I feel like he represents Ben Simmons the most. It's not to say that he is Ben Simmons. I don't think that he'll go down the same path, but we thought that he was going to be one of the top two-way players in the NBA, and his offense just has not developed nearly enough. And his defense is very good, and he's, really. But if he can't play the five, and the shooting isn't legit, and the offense isn't legit, I think he's harder to build around than we anticipated, and that's part of the reason why I think he fits this mold.
Yeah, I mean, he looks so good on defense, and on defense, you kind of see is he Garnett? You know what I'm saying? You're looking at a second year player getting defensive player of the year votes.
He came in second.
Second or third? I thought it was
third. He came in second or third in his second year.
Okay. It's and you look at that, but then it's okay, but he can't shoot at all. And that's you can't just be nothing. You need to be a good passer. You need to be you need to be an elite screener. You need to have something else outside of that stuff. And he just doesn't have.
Not a legit creator. He will be eventually probably reach a level of, maybe even the defense is so good that the offense, he can make all-star teams like Jaren Jackson Jr. did.
Yeah.
But he's always going to be a complimentary piece on offense. And how do you make it work with him without a traditional center is the real thing that I worry about with him. But he's still 22 or 23. I think so.
He was 22 at the start of this year.
I think he's 23.
23 in June.
Yeah. Okay. So still got time, but I would say for where we're at right now and where we thought he was going to be, Evan Mobley's got to win this award. All right. Yeah. This next one is the HP basketball. I'm absolutely losing my mind player. So this is a player that drives fans insane. I know he goes insane over MVP stuff and just like lives online. And it has melted his brain, similar to one of my favorite comics growing up, Kurt Metzger, who just had an insane appearance on the Adam Friedland show. And I'm genuinely worried about his mental health, but, I tweeted about that the other day. It was absolutely insane. But this is just players that drive all their fans insane. So obviously I had Tobias on here, number one for me. That's not even a question in my mind. Tobias Harris, Harrison Barnes, Jordan Poole, Josh Giddey, Bojan Bogdanovic. And then the last one I had on here was, for other reasons, Draymond Green.
Draymond's an interesting one.
He's just going insane all the time, and not able to play a lot because of it.
I've never seen a guy, instead of just saying I'm gonna sit out, like just tries to get thrown out of the game.
Yeah.
Which is like, I've never seen that before. It's
he's sticking it to all the load management critics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was gonna say, I guess if you're doing that, That's the one I'm trying to think. I feel like that's a pretty good list. I was trying to think if you like missed anybody, but I feel like you hit on a lot of the important ones. I just, in terms of like pure psychic damage, I don't know. Who are you thinking? Where are you leaning?
To me, it's got to be Jordan Poole or Tobias. I feel like Jordan Poole. But then again, like, do Wizards fans really care about the season? No, they want to be
bad. I don't think they do. I was going to say, I was going to kind of say Tobias, but I didn't want to be accused by Will of pandering to the...
Well, I mean, think about, because the majority of these guys on this list aren't on teams that like, Bojan is now, but Bojan got traded to a good team. Draymond's not on a good team. Harrison Barnes, they're probably going to miss the playoffs. And Jordan Poole, they're tanking, and it's basically Giddey or Tobias. And the thing, like, I hate to fucking give any credit to Josh Giddey at all, but he has been at least playing well for the last month. Tobias hasn't been quite as... Oh, Torian Prince is a good one. I didn't even think about him. He's a good one. He's been going insane recently. Lakers fans have been going insane with him all season. So I'll add him to the list. I tweet like a slightly negative thing about Tobias and it immediately gets 500 likes. Like, it's like kind of crazy how I can literally just tweet it. Should we do a test? And I'll just tweet Tobias bad and see if I can get 100 likes on the tweet.
This is like, we're talking about like the thing about Tobias, what differentiates him and why it's so much more elevated is because it's been 5 years of this.
Yeah.
Like when the contract was signed, it was already this, you know what I'm saying? Because Jimmy Butler was going out the door when Tobias came, was getting signed, you know what I'm saying? That is just a perfect psychic, pain thing.
Tobias has got to be, he represents, especially because I will say before this year, I was like, look, Tobias hasn't been quite as bad the last few years. It's an overpay, but he's improved on defense and he's bought into a role. And then he just went complete. He's been legitimately bad for most of the season. And to pay a guy that's $40 million and have him be not like a slight negative, just be, all right, let's see. I tweeted Tobias bad a minute ago and it already has 3 likes on it. Four. So we're going to see if we can get 100 likes by the end of this episode on that tweet. just to prove my point here. So all right, the last category we have here is the Cade Cunningham draft Twitter triple down player, aka a player that draft Twitter will not give up on. And I just want to clear the air here. You shouldn't give up on Cade Cunningham. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is,
I might be saying that, but let's go.
But what we're saying is a player who I was told was going to be a top 5 or 10 player. And got a lot of shit when I said there's no way this guy's going to be a top 5 or 10 player. And draft Twitter is just dying on the hill that I'm wrong there. When in reality, Cade might turn out to be you know, pretty good. He's had some stretches this year where he looked awesome. Although I had my comp early in the year where I said he's like washed Harden, where he looks great when the nights where the jumper's falling, and then on other nights, not so much. Kind of proven to be
true. There's a 0% chance of him ever making an All-Star game. Which isn't even really a thing on Cade. It's just like the talent level. But like, think about how many guys you have to get through to get to Cade. Like
guards in the East.
Guards in general. You know what I'm saying? Like guards in the East. You could even do guards in the East. I know we're making fun of Trae Young.
Stay in the East though.
Yeah, I know we're. I know we were just shitting on Trae Young, but like, is Cade better than Trae Young?
Six guard to make the All-Star team this year too. But also, I do just want to throw this out there. D'Angelo Russell made an All-Star team. I know the league was much weaker then, to be fair. Yeah. D'Angelo Russell made one because he was a top two pick and had like a really hot shooting season. Andrew Wiggins at one point made an All-Star game. Like the top picks tend to get benefit of the doubt. I've talked about this before. They tend to get benefit of the doubt when it comes down to this shit. And even sometimes these guys get picked a little bit too early, like Paolo made it a year too early. There are certain guys that I just think make the All-Star game because they were the number one overall pick. They get benefit of the doubt.
Can I do a counterpoint though? Like Mike Conley went like 20 years without making the All-Star team. Like,
yeah. And in the Western
Cade is not going to be as good as Mike Conley. Like, I'm sorry. Like even the high end outcomes for Cade are not Mike Conley. Like,
sure. Yeah. So, okay. So I have my list here of draft guys that people haven't given up on. And honestly, I think some of these guys might be rotation players or like solid players. Yeah. But I just don't think they're quite as good as people on draft Twitter who haven't really followed their careers make them out to be. Yeah. Number one is obviously Scoot Henderson. I mean, he has to be included here because he was so bad this year. But he is a rookie, still 20, so whatever.
And I'll hand up on that one because I didn't even like take draft Twitter's word for it. I like did my own research and I was like, yep, this is gonna be a good guy. And I was wrong. So owned by Dean.
He still might be fine, but yeah. All right. Even if I'm skeptical of that. Number two, Jaden Springer, who is going into year four in the NBA and has played like 200 minutes. Not a lot of minutes. Not a good sign. But I still see people sometimes talking about him from draft Twitter, and I'm like, you're out of your mind. AJ Griffin, who sadly we both liked coming into this year. I don't know. Any guy who is liking like 100 tweets about the rapture is coming, I'm a little bit worried. I'm not going to lie. That might be kind of outside of basketball. I'm just a little bit concerned about him moving forward. Just as a guy, I hope he's fine. I mean, I hope he's not completely losing his mind. But Jeremy Sochan, I had on this list. Okongwu, I had on this list, who I think has become one of the most overrated players in the NBA. I'm not really sure why everyone loves him. He's fine player. He's 23 still, I think. He might have some more room to grow, but like, I don't know. I don't even know if he's a starting level center. And I feel like people talk about him like he's like really, really good. So that was my list of guys. Is there anyone else you would have thrown there?
I've got a side with Inferno Kyle in the comments. I think Jaden Ivey is on notice.
Yeah. I mean, Jaden Ivey also was talking about the rapture in his post game press conferences. A little bit concerned about that. I mean, in Jaden Ivey's defense, if I played a year for the Detroit Pistons, I would probably also think the rapture was coming.
Divine punishment. You have been judged. The judgment is upon us.
I think it worse than this. But Jaden Ivey, certainly not what I wanted to see in his first two seasons. I'll say that much for a guy who liked him a lot pre-draft.
I just like he was like everyone was like, oh, he's like the for sure number four pick.
Yep.
And even with Keegan having a bad year, I would still much rather have Keegan going forward, and the Kings kind of cooked there.
I would I think I would side with you in that regard. I'd rather have a wing who can shoot and defend and has some creation juice than a guard that I look, the only thing I will point to is that my comp for him has always been De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah. Sure. And
De'Aaron Fox was not very like he was much better this year, but he was really bad as a rookie. there might be time. He was also very young, so I don't know. That's my one cope with Jaden Ivey. Maybe I'm going full draft Twitter here, but I think he should be included. So who out of Scoot, Jaden Springer, AJ Griffin, Sohan Okongwu, and Jaden Ivey should win? Dyson Daniels is also another good one, but he's also like fucking like seven. Yeah. Isn't he like 20?
Yeah, that's Dyson true. Daniels? Maybe.
That so young. True. I mean, yeah. Most of these guys are at least 21 except for Scoot.
Was Dyson Daniels drafted last year? Was
that 2022?
That was 2 years ago. Okay.
Yeah, so he's a second season.
Time is
he also tore his meniscus this year,
too. I think it's important for this award that you still have draft Twitter people like going insane about them and kind of tweeting like they're good games. And stuff like that.
Ratio.
Like, yeah.
Anytime some guy, oh, you're an idiot, stay on that side.
Right. Yeah. So because some of these guys, I think they've quietly like given up on. So, I don't know about like, I don't think Scoot has a lot of like people defending him anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is kind of why I don't really want to give up on Scoot. So I feel like it's got to be someone other than Scoot.
I don't think we could pick a rookie for this one too. I just think that it has to be a second or third year guy. And most of these guys are second year guys. All of them except for Okongwu are second year, I think.
Jaden Ivey is the one that pops out to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I feel like he has. Yeah, I just feel like he has not gotten enough blame for this. Like, Cade was out for. I know they've been like kind of better with Cade sometimes. You know what I'm saying? But like, he's also like not done very well. So.
Yeah, I mean, year two, he shot 43% from the field, 32% from three. He averaged 15 points, 3.7 assists. It's not looking great. He's 21 right now. So and not very many improvements. So I'll give this one to you and say Jaden Ivey is the winner here. I'm still clinging on to it though, that he can be better in a different situation. But yes. That's where we will wrap it up, folks. Thank you for joining. I will be streaming tonight for Sixers, the return of Joel Embiid. No Tyrese Maxey, but Joel Embiid will be playing against the Thunder, so I will be there no matter what. Join me for that if you are in the chat right now. And then we'll be back later in the week for the Patreon episode. We're almost at 600 paid Patreon subscribers. If we hit that 600 mark on the Patreon before the playoffs, I will bring back the drunk streams. I will get drunk on stream a few times throughout the playoffs. I'm not even doing a bit. If we don't hit that 600, I'm not doing it because I don't even really want to do it. But but as a reward for hitting 600 Patreon subscribers, I think it would be nice to do a few drunk streams throughout the playoffs. So yeah. Subscribe if you have not. Sign up for the Uniball Patreon. The link is in the description. All right. Take care. Bye.
Peace.